In Italy, you have some environmental poetry, which I've begun to look at. I don't know. I mean, maybe there is something to the stereotype, but I would limit it to this particular genre and to Germany. And I mean, the two Germanys are also somewhat different at that moment. I mean, in East Germany, I think you have the split between what poets write and what they dare to write, and then the sort of officially cultivated literature of technological optimism that's also there. And you have a lot of, and some writers, such as the early Costa Wolf and other well-known writers, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, they're still with the program. Later on, they're not, and they become much more critical of these ideas that are sort of propagated in close connection with Moscow. So there's also that split. I mean, there's of course the inner dissent in the GDR, which, you know, what it produces looks relatively different than establishment poets of the time. So the picture is again much more complicated than I'm able to put in a 40-minute talk. But I would to some extent probably want to stick by my guns as far as the general opposition is concerned, because I do think that there is much more of this sort of immediate protest mode, or in some of the not printed or only belatedly printed poetry, even, I mean, the fact that they are chants or things that were sung at demonstrations makes them a relatively different genre than most of the American nature poetry. Geez, I don't know where to start.
I hope you'll forgive a very naive question from somebody way out.
Absolutely.
The phrase eco-criticism, trying to understand really what that means, and I'm wondering if there's some element of literary criticism in eco-criticism, whether eco-criticism is specifically meant to be milder than, say, eco-protest.
So eco-criticism, I mean, what it's come to mean in the last 15 years is a particular area of literary and cultural studies, not environmentalism, broadly speaking, and so it's criticism in the aesthetic sense. It's not criticism in the sense of protest. So it's simply, I mean, it emerged along with other, and eco-criticism for a long time had other designations. I mean, environmentally oriented literary criticism, which was way too long for anybody to say for any length of time, or green literary studies, green cultural studies. Eco-criticism, I think, just because it's the shortest and most, you know, it has come to mean, but it really, you know, it doesn't mean necessarily eco-protest. It just means analysis. Of literary and cultural artifacts and practices from an environmentalist perspective. So that would be the sort of brief history.
What about the sort of pioneer mentality of Americans? Like pioneer mentality.
Yeah.
I mean, our self-image as being expanding into the wilderness and, you know, Louisiana Purchase and Paul Bunyan and Danny Boone and... You know, aren't those really embedded in our hearts and a part of the way we look at the environment?
Yes, except that I think even in the 19th century, of course, you have a different, I mean, absolutely, and that's part of, but I think that's part of the cultural background against which environmentalism emerges, as much as it in some ways draws on that tradition, because even in the 19th century, when you look at Alexander Wilson's American Ornithology, or you look at de Tocqueville's writings, I mean, very early on in the 19th century, you do get a sense that people are worried about Americans stomping across their continent and then back, right? I mean, de Tocqueville's are these Americans just stomping all the way to the West Coast and then stomping back once again, undoing everything that they made and remaking it, and both admires the dynamism of it and then is deeply ambivalent about what it's doing to forests, what it's doing to Native Americans. And there is that sort of elegiac sense of loss also in somebody like James Fenimore Cooper, right? So I think, and that is, I think, the mode that then in the 20th century takes the upper hand, especially from the 1960s onward, that, yes, on one hand, there is still that desire to master nature and the desire to identify the American spirit in some ways with that mastery, but also, I mean, especially from the 1960s onward, you know, increasing sense that that the cost that you pay for that mastery might be too high. So I think environmentalism emerges in that context. Does that sort of, I mean, it's a very foreshortened answer, obviously.
Yeah, and a foreshortened answer. Is there a kind of a counter-environmentalist literary movement? I mean, those people who feel, I don't want to rape and pillage, but basically who feel that...
Nature.
Yeah, that nature is ours, and it was put here for us, and shouldn't we take advantage of it?
I think there's a lot of varieties of that. I mean, in Germany, actually, it's not counter-environmentalism, it's too early... that, but in the teens and 20s, I mean, the famous German poet Gottfried Benn, of course, writes poems about how he hates nature. He really doesn't like our, for these damn walks that Germans have to take on Sundays. And so in Europe, again, perhaps stereotypically, there's also, I mean, all the way from Baudelaire, there's deep suspicion as to the healthiness of being out there in nature a whole lot. I don't know that if there's a backlash against environmentalism, other than the political one, in literature and culture, I don't think it takes quite the form that you've described, that people sort of go back to the old gung-ho, let's rape and pillage, or at least use nature. More, I think the indirect form that it takes, say, from the 1980s on, in something like cyberpunk, mm-hmm. where you have devastated natural and urban landscapes sort of totally taken for granted as background, but then you have the excitement of new forms of technology, new transformations of the human body that totally trump what might be going on with the natural environment. So I think there is a real reassertion of that sort of technological utopianism that has become associated with various forms of technology that kind of, that puts that, the iPod that we're all carrying around is, drawing on resources and becoming waste every 6 months when we have to buy the latest upgrade, sort of takes a back burner to the excitement of having these new technologies and always also having the latest of them. So I think it takes that kind of backlash more than the perhaps socially less acceptable, let's go back to throwing our trash around and and felling trees, right? Did you want to go next? And then,
how do you modify your view here of American poetry and environmentalism if you factor in, say, Native American literature, and or given the German or a certain group of Germans' fascination for Native American culture? I wonder what kind of connection you might or disconnection you might draw there.
We actually. It was an eco-criticism conference last October in La Coruña, where a lot of the European eco-critics were. Linda Hogan, the Native American author, gave one of the keynotes, and one of the German colleagues asked this question I think he sort of wanted to defend Enlightenment rationality, but he said, how come that in the United States this indigenous wisdom you talk about is so despised, whereas in Germany it's so popular? I mean, to the point where there's Germans who dress up as Native Americans and live in wigwams, right? And so this German colleague who was sitting next to me said, "That's because we are the natives." And I kind of couldn't hold it at that point, so I started giggling. But of course, there is a point to this in the sense that you don't, in much of Europe, you don't have that sense of a division between a native population and then a superimposed other population, or at least it's so far back, and it's mostly between Europeans, right? I mean, it's between the Franks and the Germans and so forth. But anyway, to answer your question a little bit differently in the context of American literature, are you implying that there is a more negative perception I think you could make that argument with regard to somebody like Leslie Martin Silko, where there's certainly real indictments of, say, nuclear plants and uranium mining on Native American reservations. But still, I mean, see, I would accuse the Native American authors of ultimately buying into a very similar myth that ultimately you can get back to nature, and you can, if you go back to the native traditions, you can actually reconnect. In something like ceremony, that's very obvious. I mean, there are these very bitter scenes about a veteran coming back and being haunted by scenes from the war, and then being confronted with uranium mining, with the devastation of the landscape. But the idea is also that through his encounter with a mythological yellow woman, he then does somehow succeed.